Is your website purdy?
Mind your business.
Does it work right?
Mind your business.
Can people find it?
Mind your business.
If you answered no or kinda to any of these questions, you came to the right podcast, because we're going to help you mind your business. Here's your host, the lexical cognizant and SEO director guy of Mind Development and Design, Mark Boyd.
I am the walnut. Welcome to this week's Mind Your Business podcast, brought to you by the minds at Mind Development and Design and our friends at Fresh Roasted Hosting right here in good old Pennsylvania. Thanks to all of you for listening to us on iTunes and Spreaker, and thank you, as always, for the love on Pinterest. We're getting a good following there. It's really kind of a cool thing to see. We do love you back, too. We want you to get the most out of your website, so we're arming you with knowledge to empower you and make the best website decisions and ask the best questions of those who are working with you on your website. You can ask us questions too. Web development, web design, SEO, content marketing, PPC, social media, and what it all means to your business. Please hit us up on Facebook with any of your questions. Email us at info@minddnd.com, or just hit that big, beautiful, and quite personable ask a question button to your right on our website. Now, we're going to be talking about template themes for websites today, and we're going to give you a better understanding of why a template theme is not the same as a custom design job, and talk about some of the elements that actually make a custom design job, well, a custom design job. Our very own Chad Rock is here to unmuddy the Roger Waters for you, so you nice. Can have a bit. I had to throw that in there, man. You're your affinity for the Floyd, I owe it to you, brother.
Many thanks.
Chad's going to give you a better understanding of what you should expect from custom web design. Chad, as always, welcome, man.
Thank you, Boydus. It's very good to be here.
Now, I understand that my favorite pup had a birthday this week.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Winston turned 8. He's a growing man now.
Can he still jump up and get the chew toy and like hang from it by his mouth several feet above the ground?
Not so much anymore. He's more of the dancing man now. He'll do some he'll do some tricks, you know what I mean? He'll spin around and roll around on the ground for you, but he's not so much into doing the jumps.
Gotcha. Well, Chad is going to be talking truth about downloaded template themes for you. The difference between a logo and a brand, winning typography, you know, those fonts that you choose, they're kind of important, and winning design trends for your website in 2015. Now, before we talk design, though, I just wanted to run this by you and get your take on it, Chad.
All right.
Especially since you're so active on social media and you have literally watched topics go viral. It's been kind of cool. And for those of you who aren't already aware of this, a video went viral over the past couple of weeks where a used car dealership in Massachusetts basically cursed and otherwise verbally assaulted a pizza delivery guy who left with a $7 tip and some change on a $42 pizza order. You can check out our blog post from this past Tuesday for the whole story, including the videos and the fallout. It's a great case study. Long story short, they complained to the delivery guy's manager. Delivery guy brought the tip back and the verbal abuse happened. It was caught on video and posted to YouTube and wound up as a story on CNN. The used car dealership actually posted the video on YouTube thinking that it would make the delivery guy look bad, and it blew up in their face in one of the worst public relations blunders I think I've ever seen. Now, Chad, I laid the scenario out to my wife, the pizza order, the payment with the 220s and 25s, and I asked her what she would have done in the delivery guy's shoes. And what she said, God bless her, she's as honest as the day is long, truly. She said that she would have asked if they wanted change. I can't argue with that. I think the dealership could have done a better job making their intentions clear, but I can't argue with her rationale, and it opens a whole other can of worms with regard to clear communication and managing expectation. However, both of them, I think, were missing here on both sides. What's your take on it?
Personally, I think that I see no reason why the delivery driver wouldn't think that was a tip. Yeah. You know, he can't. Why the two fives? You know what I mean?
That's what confused me. Just
give him the $45. You know what I mean? Keep the fiver. You know, and if you really did need change, if that was an issue, then you should have said, "Hey, man, I need change for that five." Like the driver's not a mind reader, and you got to understand this dude's delivering pizzas all day. Like he's used to people being courteous and being considerate, and you know, giving you know the couple extra bucks out of a $5 or $10 bill. So, notwithstanding, I mean the reaction of the dealership is deplorable, quite frankly. I mean, yeah. I know we joke around in the office and stuff like that, but you're in a service business. You know, I mean, you're dealing with people on a regular basis, and judging by the Yelp comments, even the ones that aren't related to the pizza guy, they did a pretty crappy job anyway. So it doesn't surprise me that they were not only that ignorant, but then again, that stupid to put it on YouTube and think that they were going to get some kind of positive reaction out of it. The great thing that comes out of it all is like the reaction, you know, and the social, the engagement piece of this. You know, we've been in his shoes. You know what I mean? There's plenty of people out there that are, you know, that are doing that job now. But, you know, you and I growing up, we've had those crappy jobs in the service industry or in retail or something where you had to serve people and you had to bite your tongue and you had to be a nice guy and you had to do this and you had to do that. This guy gets, I'm sure he gets, you know, berated plenty, you know, and he probably drives hard, you know, long distances and puts a lot of miles on his car. And it's a shame it had to happen the way it did, but like, it's really nice to see the way that, you know, that everybody kind of chipped in. I forget how much he had actually made out of the, they did a GoFundMe and it was like, he was like thousands of dollars generated for this guy. And many of the donations were in $7 increments, which was the best part about it.
Now, you know, when my wife mentioned that about how, you know, she would have asked if they wanted money back. While I don't think I'm quite in that mindset, if I put myself in the pizza delivery guy's shoes, even if the pizza delivery guy had been in the wrong, that was way over the top. It all comes back to clear communication in a transaction, no matter how big or small.
Yeah.
And on the topic of clear communication, this week's main topic of template websites. I know this is a hot topic with you as a designer. Do you feel that some businesses are being misled into thinking they're getting a custom design job when it's really just a barely tweaked downloaded theme?
It's a great topic to get into, you know, with the market the way that it is. And I think it's important to really understand the difference between downloading and adjusting a theme and you custom building one. It's become a hell of a lot more common nowadays for businesses and individuals to market themselves as quote unquote web designers or web developers. You know, they'll sell a project for an untold amount of money and then they'll go download a $60 pre-built theme from a reputable site, tweak it to their needs. And not only do I feel that this is bad for the industry in general, but it's incredibly bad for the client in question, who is, you know, truly believing that someone is spending quality time developing and designing a custom solution for their needs. You know, don't get me wrong, there's definitely sometimes when a downloaded theme is the way to go. We've personally run into a number of potential clients that want custom designs but aren't at the point where they really need it. And in those cases, we'll actually advise them to go and download a theme, you know, they'll start, you know, to get something to start working towards establishing a model for their business. You have a great idea. Hey, that's fantastic. You can't afford a custom website? Find a theme that fits your immediate needs and see if your business idea has legs, you know, see if it'll work. That's the quickest way to find out if you can do what you think you can, and it'll help to weed out what you do and what you don't need to focus on. So there's definitely solid reasons for having a theme template. You know, we're not against it, but when it comes to real business, there's no reason whatsoever for a legitimate web business to charge clients thousands of dollars for a $60 theme and some adjusted colors and graphics. I'm sorry. There's no reason for it. I've never seen work that's that good that I could just gloss over the fact that they're using a pre-built theme. You know, the sad part is that most clients don't realize it until someone with a little know-how shows them. And even then, by then, it doesn't matter, or it's just like, well, who cares at that point? It's done and passed.
Well, some of them, it seems like they can almost, because that's what they're exposed to and they believe that's truth, it's like, for lack of a better cliche, it's like pulling teeth to get them to come around and see, no, that is not a custom design. This is a theme and very minor tweaks were done on it.
And they think that they're paying for a designer and a developer's time. The work is being quantified, but it's not being, you know, but not nearly enough, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or not properly. It's just, it's actually quite easy for anybody, realistically, any business to go, you know, and see if they have an actual, you know, professionally built theme for them, or if they got something that someone just downloaded. You know, you can just check your source code. You know, you can find your source code. You go to view and then view source, or if you're on a PC, you can hit command U while you're in your browser. Typically that will bring it up. And what you typically see is a large section at the top with a lot of links and scripts. You know, with WordPress sites, it's super easy because typically you're just looking for, you know, all their files are kind of under common directories. So you'll find something like WP content. When you find that, when you're viewing source, you look for WP content /theme/name, you know, and if the name isn't your company name, or if it's, you know, some random name, you may have been taken advantage of, you know. If you're still curious about it, you can Google that name. And if it is a well-known theme, or if it is on a website that sells those themes, you'll be able to find that, you know, through Google. You just find those online. You'll see where there's even notes. Many developers will put notes in their code.
Yep.
Some companies, some individuals don't always realize that there's more notation in the actual core of the code than there is in just like the style sheet. So we've seen it in the past where someone has downloaded a theme, they put their name on the style sheet, and then they sent that to the client, and that was their custom design. Well, you know, a little bit deeper in the actual function pieces of the site, you know, you can still find where the actual name of the theme is being called. You know, it's still there. So any solid developer would know this, and it's safe to say that if they do know this, that they're not building from a theme. You know, they know better. Right. So kind of take that into some consideration when you're trying to find good developers, when you're trying to find good designers. I've said it time and time before, taking advantage of this of people in this industry is super easy to do. Building from a theme is just weak dev and design anyway, if you really want to think about it. You know, is there really any actual design that happens when you download a theme? You know, and not really. You know, so if you believe that changing colors and adding a new logo to a pre-built theme makes you a web designer, then I have a fantastic timeshare opportunity for you at a golf resort down in Florida. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and you know, the same can be said about the development side of these sites. You know, we mentioned it before, adding functions to a pre-built theme can be really tricky and realistically pointless if the edits aren't done properly or the theme requires updates. You know, you kind of get what you pay for. And if you're in it for the short term, or you're in it for small time, you know, just to get it started, then hey, use a theme. If you're a professional business though, if you're out there selling product or you're trying to make a name for yourself, be wary of some of these guys that are going to sell you really great website, you know, and all the bells and whistles, this, that, and the other thing, and they go and download a theme and take your money. And
now, when you mentioned before about tweaking color on some of these templates and all, mm-hmm. do you think it's fair to say that many or most businesses put more thought into, you know, images and color, like sticking in an image, sticking in a color, and bells and whistles, and forget how important typography is when it comes to customizing their website, that they forget how much a font can say about them and their business, especially Helvetica, which is so neutral, it really doesn't say anything. Maybe it's the font for businesses with nothing to say. You know? What would you say is the key to, as you put it, and I really like this, the key to winning typography?
Well, first off, I always enjoy a little entomology, you being a wordsmith, I know you'll dig these additional little facts relating to our popular font that we love to mess with, Helvetica. I mean, goodness, how can't you get away from it sometimes? But you know, I'm pretty sure it was the default, and it still may be, you know, the default for Macintosh computers. There's a solid, really good reason why it became so popular in the early 2000s, as Apple kind of made like Apple blew up. You know what I mean? You had your iPods starting up, you know, the phones starting up. Everybody and their brother had a G4 or had like a new iMac. You know what I mean? So obviously we used them in school too, and they became really good for educational purposes. So a lot of kids had them. They had to get the notebooks, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is it's realistically you can kind of boil it down to Times New Roman and Microsoft Word. You know what I mean?
You know, like, I was going to say that. Helvetica actually looks better than Times New Roman, but that's like saying, hey, Chad, I smell better than that garbage can over there.
The point of it is it's a default font. You know what I mean? It's uncreative. It's, I can't get past the first font to see what else this might look good in, or I need to write something up really quick, open up my document, blah, 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 print it out, here it goes. Oh, hey, that kind of looks nice. You know what I mean? Like, you use it enough, it's not necessarily that the font is like super popular or super awesome, or there's anything freaking great
but
about it.
It kind of looks nice.
It kind of looks nice.
I think you just summed it up, man. It kind of looks nice.
Oh,
it's not bad.
It's not bad. It goes back to, like, you know, our little joke that we have in the office, you know, Helvetica, it's just too neutral, you know?
Yeah.
And the reason we say it's a neutral font, it's the default font. It's one of the best font for just plain blah, just get it out. Easy to read. There you go. It doesn't necessarily make it the great font, the greatest font for everything, but some people thought so, and it just Helvetica.
It sounds cool.
It sounds cool too. You know,
it's got four syllables.
You know, getting into like the naming, you know, convention of it, we always say, you know, it's just too neutral. And I make that joke in some circles, and some people just kind of like laugh it off, like, huh, like, okay, like they don't quite understand why it's neutral, or it's considered a neutral font, you know, and it's not necessarily a neutral font because it just looks good on the screen. You know, for those that don't know, Helvetica was a font that was created by a Swiss typeface designer named Max Mettinger.
It had to be Swiss, didn't it?
It absolutely had to be Swiss. Swiss is the important term here, Mark.
That's right.
You know, come on. You know, because, you know, or being the wordsmith such as yourself, the Latin name for Switzerland is Helvetica. So the name essentially came from the Helveti, which were like a Gaulish tribe. You know,
it's inherently neutral, man.
Exactly. We joke about its neutrality because, you know, it's inherently neutral. And then on top of that.
And I don't mean that disrespectfully. It's just amazing how when you connect the dots the way you did, it's like there really is deep meaning behind the neutrality of that font.
it's hilarious when you think about it in that way too, because even nowadays, you know, it's the neutrality thing. You know, Switzerland has a reputation for quote unquote armed neutrality. You know, it was most notable, you know, in the early World Wars. Switzerland was actually home to Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, aka Vladimir Lenin.
Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov,
and he was there until 1917. And in 1920, they joined the League of Nations. They only joined under conditions that they would be exempt from any military requirements. So they basically said, hey, we'll give you our support and we'll give you our feedback, but never ask us to get involved with your wars. A number of other factors played into their success, and you know, but remaining neutral has always been the mark of the Swiss, and that is ever so communicated through the fonts. But as far as, you know, web safe fonts, you know, I mean, there's an ever increasing number of fonts that can be used on, you know, on the web nowadays. With the fonts, you know, there was, you know, a very short period of time where the integration of flash generated fonts kind of was a thing, and you could kind of get some custom font looks. You know, you could get away from, you could get more rounded stuff like an avant-garde or a fancy font that, you know, maybe wasn't standard, had like some, you know, crazy design to it. You know, you could get those, but it made it a little bit difficult as far as, you know, optimization techniques, and realistically it just wasn't stable. That was a very, very short period of time. I'd say not even a couple years before you know, developers started playing with different ways to import and customize the fonts. We used way back when the @FontFace declaration, and, you know, it was a pretty solid way to add custom fonts to the site, but they didn't always translate well. You know what I mean? Sometimes you would have browser issues. It wasn't always solid. Nowadays, more fonts are being created in use for print and in web. So there's a huge pool of fonts that can be seen like this in Google Font. Love me some Google Fonts. And now with those, you can just add a line of code into your header, and you essentially link the font from their library to your site. And they have a ton of fonts that you can use there that you know you can use to push your design further than you ever could realistically. And all this to note that you know there are a ton of free fonts that you can download for print that you cannot use for web. There's a great resource in Google Web Fonts that you can find, that, and you can actually look for the free variants of them for your print design. Font Squirrel is a great site to go to when you're trying to make that connection. Sometimes I'll go over to Google Web Fonts and I'll try to find something that will look good for my headline or it'll look good for my content. And then I'll see if I can find a desktop version of it on Font Squirrel so that I can comp up my designs, so that I can do a style guide or whatever I need to do. But then I have the print font and I have the web component. I can use that, and it's even easier that it's on Google. You know, like sure. I said, it's just sticking in a script and you know, labeling your CSS properly. So it makes it really, really easy. The problem, though, is sometimes we get these fonts and designs that people will download because they're just really cool looking fonts. You know, I just need this awesome font and I'm using it for everything now. And the killer here is a site called DaFont, DaFont. Now, don't get me wrong, they're a lifesaver for students and print designers. I mean, they got some really great fonts. Cool stuff. A lot of it's free. I think most of it's free, actually. But none of them, realistically, are great for web. They don't. A lot of them don't have web counterparts. In fact, I'd say most of them don't. And they're, most of them are for, you know, should technically be used for, you know, maybe headline or graphic headlines or maybe some logo work or something like that. You never want to write large pieces of content with some of these fonts, but some of them beyond that are clear ripoffs of popular fonts, you know, popular licensed fonts. So, you know, there is those, you know, hey, they're free, so people tend to flock to those, and especially when they realize that an actual license for a standard font could cost you a couple $100. If you do find some of these fonts that can't be used for web, you know, we get them occasionally, you know, and if they are to be used, you know, sometimes we need to turn them into a graphic. And some of those graphic formats might not be compatible with some browsers, you know, and realistically they're useless, you know what I mean? So we try to stay away from them as much as possible. You know, and if you're going to transition your design to web, you should really just focus on using fonts that are web safe. Most print and web counterparts, they're coming together now, like I said. You want to make sure that your typography is consistent throughout your work. So it makes sense to use something that has a solid web counterpart, even if you're not thinking, oh, I need a website right now. You know, your branding, your business, your print stuff. If you do intend to make that jump and go to web, then you should be able to bring your fonts with you. You know, I mean, think that through. We had somebody come to us not too long ago. They own the font. They didn't realize that they needed a license for the web version of it. And now they're paying a fee on a Foundry site so that they can use this font. You know, some of the Foundries are good, don't get me wrong, but you know, some of them are like, you get 50,000 views or X amount of views for this much month or a year or whatever it is. And if you're like an Amazon.com or something like that, you know, I'm pretty sure they're not using anything crazy or custom, you know, font wise. But you know, so let's say you were that big and you were paying this much for font license, numbers could mean a lot of money out of your pocket, you know. So there's definitely some additional factors to think about when getting into, you know, that whole typography and branding piece.
Well, we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, the Chad Rock will clarify the difference between a logo and a brand and tell you about some top 2015 design trends that you should be implementing on your website. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Mind Your Business podcast with Mark Boyd. I'm David Atwood, and Mind Development and Design pays me to say nice things about them. We'll be right back after these messages.
Sometimes cheap is good, but isn't your website too important to trust to some cheap web host? Like a really great cup of fresh coffee, sometimes it's worth paying a few cents more. If you're tired of downtime and slow performance, it's time for a better web host. Fresh Roasted Hosting's accelerated web hosting means your pages load faster and can handle more traffic, while their virtual and dedicated servers mean you've got room to grow. Best of all, every hosting service is backed by 24-hour support and a 99.9% uptime SLA. And thanks to their Tier 2 data centers in Texas and Pennsylvania, Fresh Roasted Hosting delivers a full range of hosting solutions. Accelerated web hosting, domain names, private servers, even co-location services, they've got you covered. Your website is too important to trust to some cheap web host. Upgrade to Fresh Roasted Hosting today and use promo code FRESH2014 to save 10% on any new hosting service. Visit FreshRoastedHosting.com today. Terms and conditions apply. See FreshRoastedHosting.com for complete details.
We keep our word. It's after these messages. So now, back to the Mind Your Business podcast from Mind Development and Design.
We are back with the Mind Your Business podcast, and this week we are chatting with Mind co-founder and lead designer Chad McComsey. We're talking about, we were just talking about typography before the break.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I think typography, now I'm admittedly the old fart in the office. When I think typography, I immediately think logos, because my formidable years were in the 70s and 80s, and you know what a music nut I am. And with Kiss, Iron Maiden, and Scorpions, I think of them when I think logos. These were bands that were ready for the marketing age with instantly recognizable logos that at times maybe kind of acted as brands. Now I think Iron Maiden first, especially since we were just talking about fonts earlier, because various books and tribute albums have been created about Iron Maiden, and the book titles and the album titles are all written with that particular font that they use in their logo.
Mm-hmm.
So that from a distance, even if you can't read the title,
you know the font.
Absolutely, man. You immediately know it's Maiden. So now, conversely, and I love this. There was a documentary I saw on VH1. I can't remember what the name of the documentary was, but there's an author, Chuck Klosterman, that I really, really like a lot. His commentary on music and sports. He's just a really smart guy and real insightful and funny too. He made this statement about Kiss, and this guy is a huge Kiss fan, by the way, but he said most bands wanted to be the Beatles. Kiss wanted to be Coca-Cola. And this was a reference to them splattering the Kiss logo or brand on anything that they could sell, from old transistor radios to coffins, for crying out loud, not just a book or a tribute album. What is the difference between a logo and a brand, Chad?
Dude. Kiss is the perfect example to use.
I mean, not that they're capitalists or anything.
No. But like, seriously, wow, you want to make a transition? Like, wow, those are the guys to go for. I mean, you know, the basic difference between a logo and a brand is this, okay? A logo is your graphical representation, okay? It's your mark. It's used on all your collateral. It represents you or your business, okay? A brand is how your logo is used. How it's presented, the feel, the spirit of your business, how it interacts with the world and the message it sends to your consumers, okay? The Kiss logo is
that sends
iconic.
A lot of messages to consumers.
The Kiss logo is iconic, but the Kiss brand is infamous, okay? We all know, just like you said, that logo is on everything, okay? The brand drives the band, first of all. It drives the merch, and it drives the sales, you know? So it's like the brand is why Gene Simmons is still relevant, okay? It's like the music is great, don't get me wrong, but the brand is why Gene is still relevant today, you know? You can say what you will about the music, okay? The brand will never die, okay?
Well, you don't have a Bob Dylan pinball machine. Not that you couldn't, but it wouldn't make sense.
It just wouldn't make sense. Good Lord. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly, though. The brand is what makes the money, you know? It's the life force behind the marketing strategy, okay? The logo is just the face.
All right. To wrap up this week's show, Chad, hit our listeners up with some 2015 web design trends that they should be implementing so their website doesn't look and feel like 5 years ago.
Yeah, sure. Good luck.
Moves fast. It's hard to believe that the internet has really only been a real competitive marketplace for about 10 years, because if you go back to 2005, there were still people arguing whether or not the internet was really a good place to do business.
I kind of feel the same way, in a way, about the trends for 2015, we'll say. I mean, it's not that there's anything here that realistically we're not doing already, or that shouldn't be done, or sure. Ideas that are thoughts that haven't already, been out there. But, in my opinion, for a couple of years, these have been around. But, in the business, we kind of see trends kind of before a lot of people take notice to them as well.
Sure.
So, in this case, we'll stick to what we know is definite, no surprise, large images, minimalistic type, it's all the rage.
Even full screen images.
Oh yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Big full screen images, small menus. Like I said, the minimalistic type thing is huge. A lot of, there is some parallax scrolling going on in there, but the big focus has been on the images themselves. I mean, a nice quality image can speak volumes for your product or for your feel. It could speak to your brand sometimes a lot better than a couple paragraphs of text. Now, that said, of course, we always have our debates back and forth with the SEO side of things, so obviously you know why text is good and why
sure.
Very image heavy sites aren't necessarily the best. That doesn't necessarily mean that they can't be optimized,
right?
But it also, again, it's trend. It's something that's popular. So it's up to us to kind of work with it, and figure out how we can make it better. But the large images are big. They kind of need to be done right. You know what I mean? When done well, the impact of a large image that it has on your layout is substantial. Like I said, the images can play into the branding. It can really set the site off. But if it's executed poorly, it can kind of make your site feel a little disconnected, a little choppy, and you kind of get back into that uncomfortable, awkward area. So you got to be a little bit careful with the kind of images that you choose, and how you're using them. So it's a little bit more than just, oh, I need a big image on my site.
Yeah.
And think about what that's going to be as well. But along with the minimalist design trends are these fantastic ghost buttons.
Who are you going to call?
Ghost buttons. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've seen them before, and it's I just recently realized they had an actual name. So I was like, wow, okay, ghost buttons. I mean, I didn't know that's what they called. I just really called them minimalist buttons or outline
sure.
buttons or something like that, because essentially that's all they are. You figure just a regular rectangle outline with some simple type inside. No colors, no gradients, no real flair to it. Just simple and clean. A lot of the times, the appearance of these buttons relies a lot on the background, So, I mean, if you have a solid background, they're pretty simple. But if you start getting into this, these above trends with, the big images, you need to be cognizant of how the background interacts with your minimalist button design. Is it still readable? Can you still see it? Is it too light, too dark? So on and so forth. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As with any trend, when well done, the buttons are effective, they're attractive, and they're simplistic. However, when placed over complex images or similar colors, your impact's going to get lost, and it's just kind of a...
And the button could actually get lost depending on the image.
Exactly. And that kills your conversion. So... what good is that, Another quote-unquote design trend for 2015 is responsive design. Now, I'll say it again. To me, it's not really a trend. We've been doing it for years,
yep.
And it's not a trend. It's the way it should be, okay?
It's an evolution, really.
Yeah, it's realistically, it's just the way the business is now. You need to be prepared for that mobile response and that engagement. So there's nothing trendy about responsive design. It just has to happen. It's like saying that table-based layouts were trendy from the 80s to the 2000s. there wasn't trendy. It's just the way it was done.
Right.
The bottom line is if you're not designing for all devices, even the ones that aren't necessarily in production yet, you're missing the boat. A big part of responsive web design revolves around grid layouts. Most web designers are already familiar with various grid design elements as a way to organize the content and a way to make the page look nice. So there are those that are familiar with it, but the difference now is that visually the grid is more accessible. It's the grid is more visual and used at more like a design element rather than a way to organize the content. So by that, I mean, like when you see a well grid based site or a good grid based site, you're going to see large blocks of color, large blocks of images, you know, perfectly aligned blocks of text and content that yep. make the layout compartmentalized, but still stylish and organized. You know, they'd have a really nice look to them. And you can see desktop design and you can imagine the way it breaks down into tablet and mobile. You know, it's like it's a design that makes sense visually. You know what I mean? Like you don't even necessarily have to see it in action to know that it works. It may seem simple, and sometimes it sure. is, but you know, we as designers are always looking for that balance of form and function, and the simplest concepts can still deliver a huge impact. So the final trendy note that I'll add, I actually just read about this morning, the latest Pantone color of the year. It is a color called Marsala. Now, when I heard the name, I thought chicken Marsala. I don't know. What do you think when you hear the word Marsala?
I thought the same thing.
Okay.
Chicken Marsala. Tastes like chicken.
Tastes like chicken. Now, I mean, like typically, like to you, what like when you hear the word Marsala, what color do you think?
Now, see, now I'm going to sound like an idiot. If I'm thinking chicken, I'm thinking like a very neutral, like very like almost light beige color.
You're kind of on point there because like I thought the same thing. Chicken Marsala, you can have a number of different, let's be honest, you can have a number of different colors depending on the ingredients. You know what I mean? I'm pretty damn positive I've seen it done as a red sauce. I've seen it done as a brown sauce. I've seen it done as wow. a light cream sauce. So I mean like the name I'm not 100% like thrilled with because like I said, I think chicken Marsala, but I assume it was a reddish color, okay? But it turns out that the color is more derived from Marsala wine, which, hey, I can cook, but I'm not that much of a, you know, I don't know all that. So it's Marsala wine, you know, and it's, you know, it is kind of a reddish color, but it doesn't quite have that punch that I would expect for a wine color, for a red, or for even the name, really, let's be honest. You know, in fact, the new Marsala color is quite drab. It kind of reminds me of a faded brick, you know, not the nice red brick, but that dirty brick that's been beaten by the sun for decades, you know, like yep. you can tell that there are some reds and some browns in there, but the murky appearance of it just kind of takes it out for me, you know. And then they go as far as to say that it has some kind of retro throwback. And I'm sorry, but I mean, you know me, there's something I'm fairly fond of. It's retro design and, you know, this color, oh, yeah. not so much, you know, I mean, if to be honest with you, it was the last thing that I was thinking as far as use. You know, if anything, I would think that Marsala is a solid secondary, maybe tertiary color. I wouldn't, sure. I would be very hesitant to use it for anything other than an accent color, realistically in my designs. The color has, though, been picked up by a lot of interior design specialists in some companies like Keurig. They'll use that color and they'll put it on products or on furniture. But realistically, the lackluster appearance of the color itself makes its application that much more difficult, in my opinion. You know, if you're talking about something that's on a nice fabric, like it's on a nice silk scarf or a nice throw, or you know, it has something with a nice sheen, you know what, man, yep. that color might be awesome. It might be beautiful. But if you're using that color on a wall or on a couch or
oh, yeah.
something with like a dry fabric, you know what I mean? That's it's going to make it look drab and outdated. You know what I mean? And in my opinion, you can still get retro without being outdated. So says the mind.
So saith the mind. Well, Chad, thank you again for coming in for the podcast this week. Always great to have you and some tremendous information there, brother.
Thank you, sir. I'm happy that I could spout off a little bit and, you know, take up some of your time.
And thank you for tuning into this week's Mind Your Business podcast presented by the Minds at Mind Development and Design and our good friends over at Fresh Roasted Hosting. Thank you for listening on iTunes, Spreaker, and for following us on Pinterest. Make sure you send your questions on Facebook or ask a question page on the website or email us info@mindbnd.com. From the Minds at Mind We'll see you next week.
From the minds at Mind Development and Design, thank you for joining us today. Until next week, make sure you mind your business.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?